You're listening to New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Kilby, XV, Lady Rick, Bweebum, with Rob Springer.
Hey everybody, it's your old friend John DeLuna. Welcome to New Soundwave 59. Awesome. Almost all the way to 60, Brian.
Wow.
Can you believe it? Can you believe it? With me this week is Brian, as you just heard. He's the guy who said wow. And our old friend XV, the greatest XV on earth.
No video this week.
No video.
Well, I'm here.
Yes, he is here. I can prove that. I can vouch for that because I can see him. And let me tell you guys, listeners out there, our fair listeners out there, it's a miracle that we're doing this show because we are, what, like 24 hours since the great fall of Skype?
Yes.
2010. Yes. It was
national news. It's insane.
It was. It was national news, and I'm sure we're not the only podcasting crew that had a hard pill to swallow last night.
That pill was called Uvu.
Yes. Yes. And it cost $5 a pop.
Yeah.
Uvu was, thanks to Brian, was our quick fix for RFC. And it's a pay for Skype kind of clone wannabe. And Brian, on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give Uvu?
Well, you know, it says that 8 out of 10 people prefer Uvu to Skype. 8 out of 10 people are also stupid. So I give it a 2 out of 10.
On a scale of 1 to 10, I would give Uvu your mom.
Fail.
Yes. Yes. Uvu, in short, Uvu sucks. But it did technically, I guess, produce a show for us.
Actually watching it and listening to it, it doesn't sound that bad. I think because we are actually involved in the communication back and forth, that we were more sensitive to it. But you know what? For Christmas, I got Red Dead Redemption. Thank you, Triplet.
Yes. Awesome. That brings us to New Soundwave, actually. Your video game podcast of indeterminate length every week. So this week we're going to be talking about some cool stuff. We're going to be talking about the PlayStation app for the iPhone and Android and what that's going to look like. It's kind of interesting. Let's see, Portal 2, Call of Duty. We're going to see how much money it has raked in. It's a lot. Spoiler alert. John Madden game movie. That's right. They're going to make a movie out of the Madden game. And as weird as that is, it's as for the weirdness that we get in that story, we get awesome out of our topic for the week. Our topic for the week is gaming by the numbers. EGM this month ran a really cool article about inflation-adjusted costs for games and systems from our childhood all the way to modern day. And so we'll look at how expensive that stuff really was. Maybe talk about it.
I'm really interested to see how that turns out.
I remember paying $75 for Street Fighter II Turbo on the SNES.
Yes,
I bet that's
a... I remember being there at launch for that.
Yeah, me too.
That's a ridiculously expensive game.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember for sure, but I think in 1990 when I got my first NES game, give me a break, I was 6 then, I believe it was still over $50.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I remember buying games for... We'll get into this later. I'll shut up.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It'll be fun. Anyway, fun stuff. Okay, so first, Sony is gearing up to launch the PlayStation app for iPhone and Android. And so according to PlayStation.blog, this is going to be an official app. You'll be able to not play games, but you'll be able to check out your PSN trophies. You'll be able to read about the latest games, news and hardware, updates for your PS3, your PSP, your PS2 still. They still give the PS2 a lot of love. The PS2 still probably rakes in a good amount of dough.
More than I make in a year.
Yeah. See, there you go. And unfortunately, at this point, it's really kind of European centric. You're going to read announcements or have a lot of announcements and updates from the European PlayStation blog. But I'm sure if this is popular when it rolls out in the near future, that a US version, certainly a Japanese version, will be coming pretty soon. It's kind of interesting to think about that, to have kind of an app that, you know, keeps you updated on your PSN stuff. I mean, an Xbox Live app would be kind of neat, although they kind of have that, don't they, with the Windows Phone, or have they not rolled that out completely? I'm not sure. Brian, do you have any idea on that? I know that's surely in their plans.
Yeah. That's great. I honestly don't know, but I just have to comment on something. It's an aside, and I terribly apologize, but we just got the best tweet ever, because we tweeted out that you should listen to the show because we're airing live. And since you mentioned Legend of Zelda, Navy tweeted at TF Radio, "Hey, listen."
That is
the nerdiest, best tweet we have ever received. Yeah. I loved
all this work was to get that tweet.
I love Twitter bots so much.
They really are awesome.
Okay, sorry.
I've got my favorite Twitter bot is something, some weird, crazy Twitter bot that's following me. And every time I say something, I haven't figured out what exactly the word is that triggers this. Every time I do it, though, I get the Twitter bot to give me spam real estate advice in Swedish. I had to go out and do on Babelfish, copy and paste a couple words to figure out what language this was. But yes, it basically, it's a Swedish spammer that has caught my attention, or I've caught its attention.
So the PlayStation, what are they called? What's the name of the phone? They're not calling it the PlayStation phone. They're calling it something else because.
I think it's going to be called. It's basically. I'm not sure that they have a definite code name or the marketing handle for it. But it's basically going to be like a Sony Ericsson.
But since Sony Ericsson isn't Sony, they're not actually getting the PlayStation name because they would actually have to pay to use it. So it's something similar-ish to place. That sucks so bad, too. If I was Sony Ericsson, I'd be like, I can't even use the name?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You know, and Sony actually commented on that within the past week or so, this came up, the idea of, hey, you know, you're talking about the PSP2, and everybody knows that you're going to do a PS phone. How's that going to, work out? And, you know, their response was kind of a no response. It was kind of dodging the question. But essentially they said, yes, you know, we realize this is going to be incredibly confusing and we're going to work on that. We're really working hard to figure that out. It'll be interesting. It's one of those things where it kind of just sounds like it's a bad idea and everybody knows it's a bad idea. But for whatever reason, it's too late to kind of turn back. And so they're going to do the best they can. With it. It sounds like, you know, when I hear PlayStation app, I want to say that would probably be the greatest solution is to do a PlayStation app where you can, through the app, buy certain games and play certain PlayStation branded, you know, Sony games, classic PS1 games and stuff like that on your iPhone and Android and kind of call that a day.
If there was just a slight bit of interoperability between the two systems, you know, they don't have to run the same games, but if you could play a dumbed down version of not of every game, but of a handful of games that you could sort of, Legend of Zelda, the two that came out on the Game Boy Color, escaped me what they are. Oracle of Ages and Oracle of Seasons. You know, one game is if you play them both, you get a code and you can unlock the true ending. If they could do something like that between them, just so that it's I have some sort of compelling reason to own both platforms instead of both platforms sitting out there and wilting away and going nowhere. I mean, you know, the hardcore Sony people that might give them a reason to go in, you know, in both directions. I think that's really the only people, the people out there like you, John, who actually bought a PS3. You're the kind of people that will be buying this hardware. And there's not a lot of you out there. I mean, and, you know, it's much to Sony's chagrin. They really need to pimp that out more.
They really do. They really do. And yeah, this is one of those things where it was probably a great idea, or much more viable idea, I would say, probably 3 or 4 years ago. But at this point, the iPhone and they Sony actually also talked about this at this press conference. They brought up the iPhone, and you know they acknowledged that the iPhone games, and we've talked about this on New Soundwave, the iPhone games are a completely different experience. Phone games in general are kind of this micro, fast hitting in and out, couple minutes at a time experience. And so they're really going to have to concentrate on making games for the PlayStation phone and presumably the PSP2. very immersive and very, very different in order to, you know, kind of like offer a difference. But, you know, the point being, like, at this point in time, anybody who is a gamer or kind of inclined to game a little bit on their phone, just a little bit, is probably perfectly happy with what the iPhone offers and what the Android's starting to offer more and more. You know, I mean that kind of, you get your gaming fix probably, you could probably get satisfied at this point, you know, just as well on your iPhone without having to buy like an actual PlayStation phone.
Yeah, I mean, if I really want to play Super Monkey Ball, I'll buy an iPhone and I'll play it there.
Right, right. Let's see, moving on. A couple of quick hits here. Let's see here, and Money Matters. Something that's going to make a ton of money, Portal 2.
You think so?
It's going to just, yeah, I think so. Well, you know, EA is going to distribute it. So I would imagine EA is going to throw a few bucks at the marketing. And the one thing that Portal 2 has is it's the sequel to a game that has a pretty big cult following and probably not a lot of people, generally speaking, not a lot of people know about mainstream-wise. So Portal 2, it's coming out in April. That's been confirmed. That's technically the news. I think it's got a chance to get a little bit of push, a little bit of steam. You know, I mean, it's got a cool name. It's a catchy name. Like I said, EA is going to push it. We'll see. One thing that doesn't need any pushing, it's doing fine as it is. Call of Duty Black Ops has already reached $1 billion in sales.
Oh my God!
And that is in about I would say a little less than 2 months' work. So that is not bad. Nice going.
It's not even that great, is it?
No. Well, actually, no. It's gotten so-so reviews. It's gotten kind of like a big meh from Call of Duty fans in general. And most of that has to do with the single-player experience is kind of lacking. It's pretty short. And actually, this will tie in later. I'll bring this up again later in our topic. But the single-player mode's lacking. But nevertheless, it's already reached $1 billion in sales. It's sold or it's moved more than 5 million units. It moved more than 5 million units in its first day alone. And Activision has come out and mentioned that Call of Duty and Avatar are the only like entertainment properties to achieve $1 billion in revenue this fast. So pretty impressive. Pretty impressive stuff. Hey, our good friend JD has been kind of involved a little bit in this. DC Universe Online is confirmed that it's coming out in January for the PC and the PS3. It'll cost you. Okay, we're going to bring JD next week. I'm going to ask JD to come back on and talk a little bit more about this because this, as somebody who doesn't play this type of game, this stuff always floors me. So, okay, so DCU is coming out in January. It'll cost you $50 for the PC game or $60 for the PS3. That's cool. It's fine. Both versions are allowing a 30-day free trial before requiring players to pay $15 a month to play it. So that's foreign to me.
Yeah.
That's foreign.
Well, no, there is another option, right?
Oh, yes, there is. So if you like value and you plan to play this for a long time, there is a lifetime subscription that you can get for a cool $200. So sweet. So $260 and you can play it forever on PS3 or $250 on PC. So yes, I do want to talk about that with JD just to kind of like go over how that's perfectly acceptable in MMOs. I don't know. Oh, a little tidbit. They're beta testing DCU. And right now, Superman seems to be the most popular quote unquote mentor that people are picking to kind of help their characters along. And most people are picking heroes. Most people are deciding to become a hero, not a villain. Although it's pretty close. It's 60-40 heroes to villains right now. Kind of interesting. Miyamoto says that the next Zelda game, Zelda Skyward Sword, is, quote, half finished. And that's good. But what's bad is that probably means it won't be out in early 2011 like they've been promising. So that's a big sad face to that. But I'm kind of looking forward to a new Zelda game. It's been a while since I can't remember the last Zelda game I played. I guess it was Twilight Princess. I haven't picked up anything, you know, on my handhelds or anything like that. But hey, Brian, are you into franchise?
I love The Legend of Zelda. It's one of my all-time favorite franchises. But of course, I kind of, after putting in, 45, 50 hours into Ocarina of Time, that kind of sucked it out of me. I mean, to me, The Legend of Zelda, I can play through the first Legend of Zelda game in like 2 hours, tops. I could probably do it in 30 minutes if I really pushed it. You know, Zelda 2 is another hour and a half. Zelda 3, probably 8 hours. I can't afford to put 50 or 60 hours into a game anymore. The game kind of jumped a shark, I guess, around Ocarina. And I just, I got enough out of Ocarina. I've never really had the desire to go back. I started playing Wind Waker, and that's about as that. And I'm like, no, I don't have to do this. It's kind of like reading a book and just putting it down and, you know, just being satisfied with the fact that you actually read it once. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, I know. But no, I decided that at that point I was more into games with games that are more instant gratification, like fighting games and things like that. More Twitch style games where you know, you can develop skills and instead of like going in and like racing games, that sort of stuff. So that's around 1998, 1999 is when I sort of changed paths from, you know, that being that one gamer into that other kind of gamer. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I think most people probably like that. And again, we'll talk about that later in the topic that kind of ties in, but it's interesting how people are shifting to, I guess the game that's basically a mini game, you know, kind of quick hitting, get in, get out, get your fix, and get out.
Yeah.
Couple things on Madden in the news this week. Okay, so first of all, this is proof they'll make a movie out of anything, the so-called Madden Curse. So if you're not familiar with the Madden Curse, here's kind of a quick summary. Every year, a new Madden game comes out, as we all know that, and every year they pick a player for the cover. It's pretty prestigious, or at least theoretically, it's pretty prestigious to be on the cover. It's usually the Super Bowl MVP or the most, you know, notable prolific player from the season before. The problem is it's kind of become a quote-unquote curse. So there's sort of an urban legend now, and it's sort of true, actually, if you look at the numbers, that the player who's on the cover of any given year's Madden actually has a terrible year, a very down year as a player. And in worst cases, they've had like a season-ending injury, like early in the season. So it's become kind of a funny slash almost true legend that if you're on the cover of Madden, you're doomed for the upcoming year. Well, EA is apparently going to make a movie that is about the Madden curse. So,
oh, okay. That doesn't sound as stupid as I thought it sounded.
I mean, it's kind of got a hook. It's not, I guess, a truly like a Madden video game or video game movie, but it's surrounding the game. Like the game is the hook, I guess.
Yeah, if they made a actual video game movie out of Madden NFL, that would be really dumb.
Yes. What wouldn't be dumb is if they made Mutant League Football the movie. That'd be awesome. That would be fine. Okay, so the other thing on Madden these days is not so good if you're EA. A class action lawsuit is going forward that's been filed against EA and its Madden license. So the deal is, for quite a few years now, quite a long time, actually, EA and the NFL have had an exclusive license agreement. Well, the lawsuit claims, and probably I would say a little editorial here, it's probably true that this exclusivity agreement keeps the Madden games really expensive. So every year they're right at $60, $65. And of course the special super duper edition is like $85 or something like that. But if you'll remember back in the days of the Dreamcast, which is probably the last time that we had NFL games from multiple game makers, you would have games like NFL 2K1, and such, and some of those games would run like $20.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Not all football game is worth.
Frankly, absolutely, because you get a new one every year.
Right.
So yes, it's a $20 game if there ever was one, but not anymore. So that's what this lawsuit claims, and you know, rightfully so. So we'll see. It'll be interesting if this agreement's busted up. up, and we go back to the days of NFL games from 3 or 4 makers every year. It would be interesting.
That would be awesome.
Okay, so that would be awesome. That would be awesome. Okay, so I think it's time to get into our topic of the week, and this is a nice meaty topic. So this month, EGM published a really great article called Gaming by the Numbers, and all they did was basically go back to the late 70s, to the Atari VCS 2600 days, and then through to modern times, and they basically looked at consoles and how much they cost at launch, and games and how much those cost within the first, you know, 6 months or so of a game's of a system's life cycle, and they adjusted that for inflation, and they looked at how stuff really, you know, kind of panned out through the years when you adjust it for inflation. And so before we get into the conversation, let me set it up with a couple of interesting things. So the most expensive – oh, and by the way, the Neo Geo, for obvious reasons, not included.
Yeah.
Not included in this. Some interesting things. So when you adjust for inflation, the most expensive console was actually the Mattel Intellivision.
Yeah, that makes sense. I can see that.
Yeah, absolutely. When you adjust it, well – the price tag was $300, $299.
I was thinking it was four, but okay.
But when you adjust it for inflation, it's a $792.
Wow.
Tons of cash, buddy. And again, this was, let's see here, back in 1980. So it was a while ago. Now, again, when you adjust for inflation, the cheapest games from all the systems, when you work it out, has actually been the Wii. The Wii on average, when you adjust for inflation, actually you probably don't have to adjust much for inflation for a Wii. It's about $54 a game. The most expensive console at the original price, when we were just talking about just the sticker on the box, was, Brian, you want to guess? Or you may have looked at the show notes.
Well,
yes, buddy.
The cheapest, was it the cheapest?
No, the most expensive console, like sticker price. For inflation.
I remember the 3DO was like $699. The PlayStation 3 was like $600. I guess the 3DO. Was that it?
You are correct, sir.
Ah.
You are correct. And actually, technically, it was $599 when it rolled out. Most people think it was $699, and I think technically you might be correct, but right before it launched, it went out the door at $100 cheaper. And they actually...
Still not worth it.
Still not worth it.
I say that as a 3DO owner. It's not worth it.
Are you serious?
Well, yeah, I had one. I sold it. Awesome.
I guess. Or like my apologies.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. Awesome. So yeah, actually they went to the former CEO of 3DO, Mr. Trip Hawkins.
Yes.
This is kind of sad. This is like, I don't know how to take this, but they interviewed him about this real quick. And his quote was, quote, "Many people get it wrong, assuming it was $699 because Panasonic in advance had said it would be $699.
Gotcha.
Then they changed their minds and it went out at $599. And then Trip Hawkins also notes that after the system's launch in September of 1993, the price fell to $499 by February. So it dropped by a cool $200 in, I guess about 4 or 5 months.
Still not worth that.
Still not. the only game I remember for that system was what? Was it Super Street Fighter 2 Turbo, I think?
Yeah, Gex was the big game for the system. And of course, everyone remembers Plumbers Don't Wear Ties.
Oh, yeah. Pop culture phenom. Absolutely. Yeah. A couple quick.
Okay, so while we're on that, does the article mention what the cheapest console price tag was at launch?
No, it doesn't pull that out, but I can look real quick. Let's see.
Cheapest at launch.
I mean, it would have had to be a Nintendo system, I would think.
Not necessarily. They're probably, if you want to count like revisions, the Genesis 3 was like $50 when it came out.
So the cheapest sticker price was actually, according to this, the NES in 1986. It was basically $130.
Yeah, $126, I think, is what I paid.
Yeah, so there you go. Yeah, you must have gotten it on sale. It was, if you want to get nitpicky, they have $129.95.
Awesome.
So there you go. Yeah, that's a couple quick cool things before we break it down, and I will take questions from our co-host too. But so since the 3DO, so since about 1993, when you adjust it for inflation, games have always been around 60 to 70 bucks. And the Genesis and the Super Nintendo games at the time, at their time, back in the heyday of video games, they were $50 to $70 sticker price.
Phantasy Star 4 was $100, and so was Virtua Racing for the Genesis.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine that? Even when they were like, you know, an average $50 to $70, when you adjust for inflation, that's like $80 to $100.
Yeah,
a game, which is ridiculous, ridiculous.
And this is why I didn't have many video games as a kid.
Yeah,
or now.
No, your parents are smart. Your parents are smart. Let me see here. So, yes, the Atari, back in 1977, the Atari was $200. 2600 was $200. But that turns into $700.
Yeah.
Ow.
You adjust for inflation. I know, right? Here's the one that gets me. So, back in the day, the Genesis and the Super Nintendo were probably, at least for me, kind of, I guess, in my prime video game, you know, playing days as a kid. Well, both of those systems were, the Genesis was 190, Super Nintendo was 200, 199. When you adjust for inflation, that comes out to be basically, you know, over $320.
I thought the Genesis, when it was released, the one that came with Altered Beast, I thought it was like $200, $270, something like that.
Not according to this. It was actually 190. And it notes that it was an Altered Beast pack-in, so...
Ah, okay.
I don't know. You know, and again, this may be like an average price. I definitely remember the $199 Super Nintendo.
Yes.
Super Mario World. Absolutely.
Best deal ever.
Let's see here. Best deal ever. PlayStation 1 was $300, sticker price.
Wow.
I know, which means like $430.
Oh, but does anyone else remember that those two-page spreads that the Sony would put out, like pictures of Battle Arena Toshinden, two pages like High Res or Ridge Racer? I remember seeing that Next Generation magazine in all its beautiful pixelated glory, but it just looks so amazing. And I don't know what they did. Of course, I remember playing Ridge Racer for the first time when I got my PlayStation. It was transformative. It was like, oh my God, this is the future. And now I can't even play it because it looks like mud.
You know what? That is so true, though. Like, the PlayStation really was, like, kind of like a breakthrough, wasn't it?
Yes.
Did it feel like that?
I did. Of course, I didn't get... I wanted a Saturn. I never got a Saturn. Well, I did get a Saturn, but it was after its heyday. Mm-hmm. But the PlayStation was the real, real truly next-gen console that I got, and it literally changed my opinion of what games could be.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think we've had anything like that since, really.
No.
Hasn't it been pretty incremental?
Yeah.
You know? Actually, a
big paradigm shift in games like that.
Yeah, going from 16 to 32-bit really changed things. And we probably will never get another revolutionary change like that. I mean, it's not necessarily the hardware power. It's the fact that we were going from 16-bit, you know, 2D games to 32-bit polygonal games. You know, the PlayStation can only pump like 150 or push like 150 polygons per second. We don't even measure things by polygons per second now.
No,
it's funny. But it's, you know, it was just really amazing what it could do. 24-bit color, it was fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, also in this article is an interesting discussion, kind of tying into that. About the lifespan of this current generation. You know, I mean, now people, when Sony said when the PlayStation 3 rolled out that it was a 10-year system, it was a quote-unquote 10-year system, and it was, quote, future-proof. So they were really planning, and they said it at the time. I guess nobody was really paying attention. They said it at the time, you know, the system is built to last a very long time, like twice as long as any system before this. And it's turning true. With the 360 too, because, you know, with the Kinect and everything kind of stretching out the life of these systems.
I don't think it was intentional on either parts, but it's just lucky.
It's certainly turning out to be somewhat true, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of freaking out game developers because they don't know what to do. They're used to, at this point, kind of preparing for the next system, which kind of naturally jazzes them up and gets them motivated and you know, gets them thinking about new doodads and new tricks and new stuff like that. So they're kind of like in this quagmire. They're kind of like in this lull. And they're really like confused because, like, you know, they have no idea like where in the life cycle they are with these systems. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And people think it's actually kind of stagnating their creativity because they just don't know what to do other than to put out like a sequel of all the successful games.
Well, you know, really over the years, the launch games, how many of them have really been, you know, that that revolutionary? It's typically just been the same, at least since the 32-bit generation. It's basically, or even, I guess, even in the 16-bit and 8-bit generations, they've basically been the same games over and over with just a new level of polish. I mean, you know, Super Mario World isn't any better than Super Mario Brothers 3, and most people would agree that it's, you know, inferior. The only thing it really added was 16-bit audio and 256 colors on screen at once. I mean, it didn't really do anything. Of course, when you jump to the 32-bit generation, the games that existed in the 16-bit generation are basically the same games you got in the 32-bit generation. You know, they just started pumping out 3D games. They didn't really go into the whole 3D versions of old games until later, until, I guess, Super Mario World came out. It's like, oh, then, you know, it's like then Mario, then Mega Man Legends came out, and that was kind of a failure. But for the most part, the game, the sequels are just the same old game, just rehashed. I mean, look at Madden. I mean, you know, they'll put a new facelift on Madden every few years, and you know, and it's great. But you know,
it's like the real Madden.
Yeah. But I mean, it's basically this. I mean, for God's sakes, compare Dead or Alive 2 on. Actually, Dead or Alive 3, I was thinking of Dead or Alive 2 Ultimate, which is actually graphically superior to Dead or Alive 3 on the Xbox. Compare that to Dead or Alive 4. They're the same frickin' game. Just one has more, you know, textures and such. I mean, I honestly, on a standard def TV, you cannot tell the difference. So, but yeah, I can understand them being, I can understand them saying that they're sort of in a quagmire. They don't know what to do, but they can't really use the creativity thing as an excuse. I think now we're really testing people's creativity or developers' creativity to see what more they can get out of, you know, these aging consoles.
That's true. And yeah, traditionally, you know, the last few games have always been quote unquote the best for each system. You know,
yes.
The games that they push the system, they push the hardware as hard as it can. So, yeah, you're right. There's no excuse. Like, this should be a good thing, actually, because you're going to have, like, instead of, like, 2 years of having that system really figured out, you're going to have 4 or 5, maybe, years where you can say, oh, we really know what this stuff can do. We really know this hardware. So, you know, now you've got this longer amount of time to really, like, you know, show us what you can do. So, hey, one last note on this article real quick. When you adjust for inflation, you kind of see how the price has stayed more or less the same over the years, or, you know, pretty close. There's a common, like, complaint with gamers that game developers hear, and that's the sense of value, the question of value. So usually what they hear from players, and when players use the word values, what they mean is, you know, a nice, robust, long, single-player experience. So
who wants that?
The 100-hour Final Fantasy, exactly. The 100-hour Final Fantasy-esque marathon, which frankly rarely happens. I mean, it's rarely like built into games these days, and so people complain about that, bitch and moan about that. The problem with that is most gamers, as you may think, but it's certainly been proven, most gamers don't play through games. They never see the end of the game, especially these days. A recent survey just last year from Game Developer Magazine showed that fewer than 20% of players who were playing Grand Theft Auto 4 were finishing it, and that takes about 40 hours to finish it. So not so.
I thought that's because Grand Theft Auto 4 kind of sucked.
No, it's pretty awesome. Okay. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. If you're playing it, you should like it enough to finish it. But here's another one. Here's one that's probably even worse. Fewer than 80% of players who were playing Call of Duty 4. We're going to finish it or had finished it. And that is only 10 hours of gameplay to finish that. So that is like nothing. That is like, what, I don't know, like easily like a week of just kind of casual play. So it turns out that people just don't finish games. I don't know if that's like, you know, I don't know if fewer people than in the past are finishing games. I guess maybe. I don't know. They're going right to online play, multiplayer play, maybe. But facts are the facts that, you know, people just don't, they don't buy games with the real serious intent to play through them, apparently.
With the online thing, I think it's kind of a different landscape, too. I mean, that's a good point in why a lot of people probably say they don't intend to finish, like, the story part of the game. They just want to go online and curse their friends over the internet. Of course, the joke's on them. They don't have to spend money on a video game. All they got to do is start a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, awesome. This was a good topic. Brian, anything, or Brian or XV, anything else you wanted to know about the games? One last point, which I thought was actually interesting on this, was that the NES may have been like the cheapest sticker prices, but when you adjust for inflation, they still had like $100 games. $100 games for the NES.
I paid $25 for Legend of Zelda brand new, so nice. I can't argue.
Nice.
The Sega CD add-on, we probably have talked about this before. What did it cost when it came out? I don't remember.
The Sega CD? I thought it was like $300, I thought. But
I think it was pretty expensive. You know, one of the things that's kind of like a miss in this article is they talk about like the Kinect and Move as like kind of like a new idea on how to like stretch a system. That's not a new idea at all. I mean, if you look at the 32X and the Sega CD...
Right. Sega's been doing it for a long time.
Absolutely. And look at what it did for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic.
Let me see here. Let me look it up here real quick before we go. So let's see here what the wiki says. The wiki actually brings up the 32X first. And man, I kind of regret not buying a 32X just for the novelty of it.
I loved my 32X and I still do to this day.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Like what are the good games for it?
The good game is Doom, which if you already had a PC, but you get to play it in this tiny little window, so it's kind of great. Star Wars Arcade is pretty good, and Doom, and I honestly can't think of another good game for it. But if you want to play Cosmic Carnage, you know, have at it. It's you know,
awesome. Well, the 32X was $160. When it debuted, that's right. Yeah, that's right. That's pretty pricey, buddy. Pretty pricey. Let me see here. The Sega CD, let's see, came out in, let's see, 1992, October 15th, 1992. I got one of these pretty soon after launch. Let me see here. What does it say? It doesn't say. We'll look that up. I'll bring that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure it was at least what? I think you're right, though. It was over $200, right? Wasn't it closer to 300, maybe?
I would imagine so.
God, man. Good God, Sega. I don't know what they were thinking. I will say, like, on the wiki page, it has the awesome first-generation Sega CD, which was...
Oh, yeah. That's the one I had.
Yes. It was the best.
Wait, no. I'm sorry. I had my Model 1, Genesis with my Model 2. Yeah, so never mind. Yeah.
Was the first Sega CD the one that was basically like the platform and then it was side by side?
The first Sega CD was the one that had the sliding door, the old tray. The second one was the side by side unit that you press and it popped open.
I don't
the
think
lid.
I ever even saw a first version.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll post the link in the chat for XV and all our live listeners. Anyway, XV.
My
marvels at that fine piece of technology that the Sega CD was. we will wrap up New Soundwave. Good talk, guys. This was a fun topic. It's always an interesting topic when you adjust for inflation. You see how expensive, you see how much money our parents blew on us.
Yes.
And our hobbies.
Yeah, yes. I got a Sega. I got a Genesis for my birthday one year. I never even knew how much it cost new. And then consider how that inflated, that's kind of nuts.
Yeah.
Yes. So, fun times. Other little thing, real quick. Again, while I'm looking at these pictures of Sega CDs and Mega Drives and junk like that, the one thing I loved and miss about the Genesis, the sliding volume control.
Yes, that was awesome. Oh, yes. And the built-in headphone jack.
Yes. Yes, that looks gigantic by today's standards. And the pins where you plug in the controller, the metal pins.
It had, yeah, well, yeah, it had the 9-pin. I think it was 9-pin. It had the very common old whatever that connector is called. I've already forgotten, but it's yeah, that was
the serial port. Is it?
No, it's the kind of connector. It's I forgot. It's a common name for a plug, but you could use your 2600 controller on it. It's pretty sweet.
Sweet. Your incredibly expensive $2,600 controller.
Yes.
When you adjust for inflation. So anyway, that's New Soundwave for this week. Hey, everybody, this is a holiday week, and we recorded this on an off night. So
yes.
For all our live listeners and for all everybody listening out in podcast land, thank you so much. Have a happy holidays, and we will see you next week.
Happy holidays.
This has been New Soundwave with your hosts, John DeLuna, Brian Gilbert, XV, Lady Rick, Gweebum, with Rob Springer. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at TF Radio for news and updates. Check out all our videos at tfvideo.net. Like the podcast? Tell your friends. New Soundwave is a Radio Free Cybertron production. Copyright 2010, Radio Free Cybertron.